Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. One thing we certainly are acquainted with now is that people of faith of different religions around the world have come to understand that audiovisual mass media can be very useful tools to spread religious messages. This morning, in this part of the show, we'll be talking a little bit about how this trend has played out in Africa, and we'll be talking with Birgit Meyer. She's an anthropologist from the University of Amsterdam. She's here visiting the campus. She'll be giving a talk. This is in the MillerCom series, and of course, all of these talks, they're always free and open to the public. Anyone who is interested in attending should feel welcome. She'll be speaking tonight at 7:30 in the Knight Auditorium at the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory Street in Urbana. Her visit here is hosted by the Center for African Studies, and she will be talking about some of her research on the popular cinema of Ghana, and particularly of its depiction of a battle between Christianity and indigenous religion. These kinds of videos have become very popular not only in that part of Africa, but throughout Africa, and are very different from the kinds of African movies that are marketed to both American and European audiences. We'll talk a little bit about this and perhaps some of our other interests. And, of course, questions are welcome. 333-9455 is our number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I think it's interesting just to start off with to take note of the fact that, you know, here in the United States, we're well acquainted with religious organizations using radio and television, and also perhaps feature films. We have at least seen a few here over the last few years, notable feature films that have Christian themes. But certainly in radio and television, they have come to understand this is a great way to put out their message. So I suppose we shouldn't really be surprised if we find out that people of other faiths in other parts of the world have come to understand the power of media in the same way.
No, absolutely. And of course, what is very important to realize is that the Pentecostal Christian movement is very much a global movement that has been spreading all over the world due to contacts with America, due to activities of American preachers who also showed the power of things like televangelism, Christian programs on radio, and so on. Many American preachers have visited all sorts of African countries and brought their media and this model of preaching via media to Africa, where then Pentecostalism has been reconfigured in line with local concerns, local questions, and where also more local programs that would proselytize via television, cassettes, and radio have emerged.
I think this is very interesting because this is, a reflection of or an illustration of the trend of not only the spread of Christianity, but the fact that in places like Africa, there is the kind of practice, the kind of concerns are very reflective of pre-existing culture and pre-existing concerns. And that is, it's not that it's a complete departure from Christianity, but that it is a distinctive kind of Christianity and that is very different in many significant ways. It's different from Christianity as it's practiced in Europe or in the United States.
Yeah, at least let's put it like this. There are many people who talk about the upsurge of Pentecostal churches throughout the world in terms of Americanizing the world. I think that this argument is far too simple because, as you suggest, of course, certain ideas, certain modalities and media do spread, but they need to be appropriated due to the concerns of specific contexts. Now, a country like Ghana has a very long history with Christianity that goes back at least 150 years if we think about Protestant churches and far more back if we think about Catholicism. And in these settings, indigenous, Africanized understandings and interpretations of Christianity have emerged that also feed into the current spread and popularity of Pentecostal churches.
Yeah. I know that you're particularly in your academic work are particularly interested in the kind of intersections between religion and popular culture and popular media.
Yes, yes.
How is it that you became interested in that? So as an anthropologist, to take these two things, really sort of, in a sense, old things and new things,
yes,
and seeing how
yes.
they come together.
That's a nice question, and it's really about how I see the main concerns of my discipline, anthropology. When I started to study anthropology about 20 years ago, there was still a trend of looking at traditional cultures that would somehow be little affected by the West, that would be culturally different from what we as Westerners would know. Now, having traveled already in Africa before that time, I very early realized that this focus on traditional cultures that were different from the West was not exactly appropriate to find out what was happening in Africa at the time, in Africa at today. We are, of course, all part of processes of globalization, and this means cultural mixing. This means these people engage with images, concerns, goods that come from other parts of the world. And I realized that a focus on popular culture would indeed allow me to investigate the way in which people experience the availability of ideas and things from other settings. So popular culture for me is very much a domain of creativity and mixing. And if we study this, we can understand more what it means to be part of a globalizing world, where African traditions, African concerns, and ideas that come from outside are brought together in very intriguing ways.
Yeah, I do think that that's very interesting and is something I believe has been happening in anthropology for some time.
Yes.
And for those people who have in their mind this old model of the anthropologist, a white Westerner, probably, and it would have been a man for a lot of that time, going to another place, a less developed place, and in a sense studying that society, but studying it as an outsider, and always making sure to the extent that you could that you maintain this kind of gulf between us and them, and then going back to wherever it is you lived and reported on how these people lived. I mean, there was this real idea that there was that somehow that they were not really connected in a sense.
Yeah.
And it seems that certainly now there is much more of this movement to see everything as connected and not have this big gulf between the studier and the people who are being studied.
Exactly. So we are part of the same world, and it's no longer anthropologists' tasks, if it ever was, to write about cultures in terms of being very different in producing narratives of alterity. I think it's very important to find out how indeed people experience themselves as being part of a wider setting, of a wider world, and the popular culture field allowed me to ask exactly these kind of questions. And by now this is quite established, of course, fortunately. But 20 years ago, it still wasn't in the same way as it was now.
Yeah. Well, let's talk specifically, or I'd like to give you a chance to talk specifically about the popular media in Ghana, particularly these kinds of features that are produced and I guess would be circulated on video and that they have become very popular not only there, but they circulate now in other parts of Africa. And that there is something about the basic story that they're telling that from one to another is similar, or the kinds of themes that they emphasize are very similar.
Yeah. Now, that's very interesting. And perhaps I could start by telling you how I bumped into this whole phenomenon of video. That was in the early 1990s, and at that time I was conducting a research in a village, actually, on local appropriations of Christianity. And what struck me very much is that I got many stories in which people talked about the devil, and just as the missionaries had preached 150 years ago, they saw the devil as the head of the old gods, traditional gods and spirits like witchcraft and so on. So in many respects, the devil, the idea of the devil that was introduced by Christianity, allowed people to talk about traditional spirits and witchcraft as existing beings. And so I was working on a book that also later came out as Translating the Devil, in which I tried to stress the importance of the devil in encompassing traditional religion into a kind of Christian framework, and of course encompassing this in a negative way. But the devil made it possible to mobilize belief in the existence of spirits and their actions in a kind of Christian universe. Now, that was intriguing very much. And in that context, of course, I found that the church leaders were not very much into all this. They didn't want people to talk about the devil so much. And I found there were interesting conflicts going on. There were Pentecostal prayer groups and also Pentecostal churches that would accommodate this idea of the devil as a real being that would put a threat on people's lives and that would who would be the head of the old gods and ghosts. They would accommodate that far more. So many people gradually were intrigued to become part of Pentecostal churches. So that was a process I was registering. Then at a certain point, I came to Accra, to the capital, and I saw a big billboard depicting a human head, and then it had the body of a snake. And the film was called Diabolo. And I went to see that film. I was intrigued, and it said Ghanaian film. I had never even heard about Ghanaian films. Of course, the title Diabolo already suggested this is something about the devil. And I thought this may allow me to better understand popular ideas about the power of the devil who was occupying people so much. And so then I went to a cinema called Rex Cinema, and I watched this movie. And actually, it was about a man who could transform himself into a snake who would enter the vagina of a woman and then make her vomit money. So he would misuse a woman and turn her into a money machine. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a spectacular film. It's a horror film. But above all, it is a film with morals. And I went to find the producer of the film, who had been the director and everything, William Akufo. And Akufo told me, well, you know, I got this story I didn't make it up. I got it because it circulates. People always talk about the devil and the misuse of human life for the production of money. So he said it's a very moralizing tale. He even told me that at first the film had ended in such a way that this Diabolo man would run away so as to make it possible for him to make a second part of the film. When he showed the film the first time, the audiences did not like this at all and said, please punish this Diabolo. Otherwise, we can't even watch at this film with any satisfaction. So I realized by talking to the producer, talking also to audiences of Diabolo, that in many respects, these films captured a kind of popular perspective. That was a very moral perspective, and that would, of course, condemn this kind of behavior as very, very bad. Now, that very much intrigued me into this phenomenon, and I then, having finished the Christianity project, I ventured into the study of video films as a new project in the mid-1990s. And since then, I have been following developments in the Ghanaian video film industry.
And this particular film that you described, this is just one example. There apparently are many films that are similar in a sense that they have this very strong theme of battle between good and evil.
Yes, yes. So that is a very strong theme, and I found that in very interesting respects it links up to the messages that we also hear in Pentecostal churches and in African independent churches, where also the dualism of God and devil and this cosmic spiritual battle between Jesus and the devil is talked about very much. And so that is why I came to think that in many respects these films offer a kind of visual extension of Pentecostal sermons.
Mm-hmm. So I think this is very interesting because, first of all, because I think it illustrates, as we were talking a little bit before, one of the qualities of this great emergent Christianity that we see, particularly in Africa, but you see other places as well, that this real embrace of the idea that there is a spirit world, that there are malignant, malicious, evil spirits in the world wanting to do bad, and that there is this kind of Manichaean battle going on between the forces of good and the forces of evil. And that idea is something that people took to. They didn't, you know, the idea that there was something like the devil, that there was evil, that there was this battle between the forces of good and evil. I'm sure that people, they didn't have to be convinced. They said, oh, well, yeah, we believe that. Of course, there's no question that we believe that. But I think that's a really interesting thing that says about how, you know, this, about how Western Christianity came and was embraced, was changed in an interesting way, and so that now we have something that is really something of a hybrid between beliefs that were introduced from outside and the beliefs that people already had.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, it is important not to forget that this image of the devil and the diabolization of traditional gods was something instigated by Westerners, by Western missioners. Missionaries, we often think about missionaries as very rational modern people, but of course a great deal of missionaries coming to proselytize in Africa and other parts of the world in the 19th century did not really fit that image. And so they very actively, in fact, embraced an idea of the devil and also traditional gods as not being superstitions, but as being really existing spirits. So I would be wary to say, okay, look, Africans, they immediately took up the idea of the devil and they started to demonize their own culture. It was, of course, the work of missionaries who kicked this off in the first place. And yes, it fell on a certain fertile ground, and this idea is mobilized now again in the Pentecostal churches. They talk a lot about witches and gods, traditional gods and so on.
Well, has that then been a force aimed at getting people to turn away from their own, from what has been their own culture? I mean, is that a way in which we are losing indigenous culture?
Of course, this is how these churches are being criticized. This is how Pentecostal churches are being criticized. This is how these video movies are being criticized, and this is also the criticism brought with regard to missions, that actually missions have instigated a process through which Africans got very much alienated from their own culture and developed a certain sense of inferiority vis-a-vis their own culture. And of course, this is so. This is the case. In many respects, the work of missions has been problematic exactly on this account, because people were very much pushed to despise of traditional culture as evil, as bad, as something to get rid of. And actually, in current Ghana, but also in many other contexts, there is a culture, and the question of tradition is becoming a kind of battlefield in which two positions are very much at loggerheads with each other. The position on the part of intellectuals and also on the part of the state would exactly be, we need to be proud of our tradition. We need to return to our tradition. So in Ghana, there is a notion of Sankofa. Sankofaism, meaning it is an Akan symbol, Akan being one of the major groups in Ghana. It depicts a bird looking back. And it is interpreted as meaning, go back and pick it. Go back to your traditional culture to do something good with it and then proceed. And actually, in the Ghanaian context, these two positions, cultural heritage vis-a-vis the diabolization of tradition, are very much at loggerheads with each other. And these African video movies find themselves in this field of tension.
Yeah. And just to round this out, I think one of the things that is true, that the kinds of movies that you've talked about that have been produced in Ghana have become popular in a lot of other places in Africa as well.
Yes, at virtually the same time as this video film industry emerged in Ghana, it also emerged in Nigeria. This has to do with the fact that in the late 1980s, video technology became available, and even ordinary, untrained people were able to make films with simple video cameras, quite low-budget films. They were not sponsored by the state, by anyone, so they really had to make films that would appeal to a popular taste. But what they achieved was really creating a video film industry in a void for both in Nigeria and Ghana, the state film industries that had been devoted to producing images of African tradition in far more respectable ways had broken down. The cinemas were down. There was very little going on. And then these videos came in and occupied that niche. Now, Nigeria is a far bigger country, which means that the market is far bigger, which means that the chance to make a lot of money with your films is far bigger. And so the Nigerian film industry has really very much outgrown the Ghanaian one. We now talk about Nollywood as the third biggest cinema or film industry in the world, following Hollywood and
the Indian Bollywood, and this is the Nigerian industry.
Yes, and the Ghanaian film industry is more minor to this, and the Ghanaian market has also been flooded with plenty of Nigerian films, and many Ghanaian audiences are also quite intrigued by the Nigerian films, which often also push the struggle between occult forces and so on just a little bit further than the Ghanaian films would do.
Yeah.
One reason for this being is that all films in Ghana are still subject to censorship, but Nigerian films are not necessarily being censored, but would spread via other means, whereas Ghanaian producers still have to take their films to the censorship board.
Ah. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Birgit Meyer, she's an anthropologist from University of Amsterdam. She's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. She's sponsored here by the Center for African Studies, and she'll be giving a talk on this very subject, talking about Ghanaian popular film, how it takes up this theme of good and evil, what that means to the ways that people think about their culture. She'll be giving a talk tonight, 7:30, in the Knight Auditorium of the Spurlock Museum. That's on South Gregory in Urbana. This is an event in the Millercom series. They're always open to the public. They're free. Anybody who is interested in going to hear her should feel welcome. And here on the program, too, questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. We have a caller here, so if you would go ahead and put on your headphones, that way you'll hear them, and we'll talk to them. The caller is in Charleston. It's line number 4. Hello.
Yes. Good to have you back, David. Great programs. I have two questions. The first is, prior to film images and the Hollywood, Bollywood, am I saying that right?
Yeah, right.
Yes. We had the King James Bible. Would you agree with that?
Sure. I think this is a very interesting point. And in fact, it is important to realize that this emerging video film industry in Ghana and Nigeria has been inspired by quite a number of repertoires. One repertoire indeed being Indian film, Hollywood action, kung fu, but then also this whole world of Christian filmmaking that had a tremendous impact. And what I find very interesting and intriguing to see is how these video movies weave together these very different strands and are really formed and framed by these different repertoires.
The second question is, again, the King James Bible, which was put together 400 years ago and as a propaganda piece after the Reformation, you know, which changed everything. And my other question is moving or the migration of Constantine from Rome to Constantinople and then the emergence of the Islamic religions, and then the conflict began, and then if I understand right, and perhaps you'll agree, that the Islamists feel and practice the same thing that any religion does, that we are right, and the Manichaeism of good and evil, and then after 700, those holy wars, you know, which there had been others, but it's been intensified. And now here in the 21st century, we have the Islamists as evil, when their religion has some of its roots within Christianity and Hebrew Judaism. And my question is, do you see those parallels? And these seem to me to be historical facts.
This is a very complicated and complex question. I would say that the Ghanaian context I know well is very much framed and influenced, of course, by indeed different religious strands and also different religions' modes of making, of distinguishing good and evil. What I find quite striking is that Islamic reform movements as well as Pentecostal churches are quite negative vis-a-vis indigenous traditions and really make a plea to move beyond these traditions. And we can find in both a process I would call the diabolization of indigenous traditions. At the same time, on another level, there is a lot of debate about Christianity with regard to Islam. And often, indeed, as you say, Islam is seen as a site of evil, an evil religion, and so on. So we do find this kind of discourse as well. It is, of course, a discourse that I myself would not want to subscribe to. As an anthropologist, I'm very much interested in the ways, in the shifting ways in which people take up new religions, which organize the question of good and evil, the question of ethics in different ways. And one point that interests me very much is how, from this perspective, other religions are incorporated or are being put down as evil. I think it's a very important mechanism we have to study very, very carefully as anthropologists without, however, at least that is my position, taking a normative standpoint and sharing this quite dualistic attitude indeed towards religion and religious change.
Yes. Could I say one more thing, Dave?
Sure.
I started a book that this young lady gave me. It was called The Blackwood Bible, something like that. I just can't remember the title, but it addressed the issue of white missionaries in Africa, and the dragging down of their culture, which had a great deal of openness, and some, they still had their hierarchies and all that, but nevertheless, their community efforts were then subjugated to Christian dogma, which I think is what you are saying, that and that goes round the world, you know, wherever, whoever got there first, you know, whether it was some of the ancients, you know, the Buddhists and others such as that, preaching, in my interpretation, those religions were basically about cooperation and love. And then the Christians come from Western Europeans, you know, who had been Romanized and then therefore Christianized, and somehow this good and evil stuff that is now choking social discourse. Either you're a good guy or you're a bad guy. And TV is full of that stuff, and all these heinous shows that are on, murders and the bald heads, which I find to be just utterly disgusting, and having firearms and all that stuff, and then interpreting all that as these people with guns are good guys, and people who are being attacked by those by the good guys are somehow bad, and it all plays into the very subject matter of this program, which, you know, I find to be delightful. And thanks again, and I'll ring off.
All right. Thank you.
You
know, something that I would be interested in hearing you talk a little bit more about is, in a place like Ghana, the effort that is going on to try to encourage people to value their own culture rather than reject it, and how that. Who is trying to do that? Who is trying to give people that message, and how successful it is?
Do you mean with regard to film, or
I guess more? I guess in a sense more generally, yeah. But that might give you an opportunity to make a particular example when you're talking about film. But I guess I'm thinking in more general kinds of terms.
Yeah. Well, we started by talking about popular culture and how popular culture is interesting. And indeed, popular culture is this kind of field where also understand our appropriations of Christianity are being deployed. It is a field where people would bring in images of demons and all that. Now, I said I'm very much intrigued in the ways in which people take up new ideas and marry them with existing ideas. So this kind of hybrid process. Of course, by implication, this means that it is problematic and very difficult to take as a point of departure a notion of culture as fixed. I do not think that there is something fixed like African traditional culture or Ghanaian culture that is there as a fixed set to which we can return or not. It is one of the features of culture that cultures change. Now, Christianity came to Africa. We talked about this. Christianity brought a quite dualistic structure. It brought the diabolization of indigenous traditions and all that. But I would find it very problematic to write this process off as basically un-African, as if Christianity, even after all those years, would be foreign to Africa. And there are many people who even say that the future of Christendom would lie in Africa, for it is Africa where Christianity is going extremely strong and is still very much growing. Now, this already shows that the question of returning to a culture, of talking about African culture as a kind of fixed set, is very, very complicated, for it would imply that we might have to say, well, all kinds of elements that came in after colonization are not really African, which is, I think, missing a point. It misses a point that has been made by a political scientist, a French political scientist, Jean-François Bayard, who talked about the notion of extraversion as the capacity of Africans to take in ideas, elements from other cultures and to appropriate them in their own ways. And I do think that about Christianity, one could also talk in these terms as a process of extraversion through which initially foreign ideas are being incorporated. Well, of course, on the other hand, in the Ghanaian field, there is a strong emphasis on the very much backed by the state, also by the National Commission on Culture, that would prefer to have culture as a very bounded and fixed resource that is purely African and that is not polluted by all these popular things. And actually, there's quite little interest in instances of popular culture on the part of state representatives. The tendency is very much to look at traditional culture as fixed and given. Now, the price paid for this is that tradition is very much a fixed matter of the past that cannot easily develop in modern times. For any mix would mean that tradition is no longer what it was. And this means that these films enter a very complicated field in which, one, we encounter views of African tradition in quite diabolizing terms, and on the other hand, responses that would assert that Christianity and these popular matters of thinking about witches as being under the devil would be seen as not truly African. And there is a kind of deadlock. And I must say I have problems with both positions. Of course, I'm not very happy about the diabolization of indigenous religious traditions, but I also think it misses the point if one would plea for an understanding of African culture as not influenced by matters that come from outside.
So I guess that maybe the question would be rather that I take your point about culture not being fixed.
Yeah.
that then maybe the matter is, are there people, for example, since we were talking about Ghana, are there people who are saying, well, we acknowledge the fact that that culture is changing all the time and there will be influences that will come from outside and maybe there's nothing we can do about that. But that perhaps what we need to make sure is that we have a voice in how it is that happens, so that at least we, you know, that to the extent that you can, you look at the whole mix and you say that, well, maybe in a way that we can actually, in some deliberate way, can actually have input into how that happens, rather than just having it be something that happens to us say that something, well, this is something that we're going to be a part of this process and perhaps make some choices about what we want to keep and where it is the culture is going.
Now, of course, it would be a task of the state actually to engage in these kind of things. And there is, as I said, a National Commission on Culture in Ghana in which these issues are also debated. And I understood that also Christian churches now form part of this body. But still, it is a complicated issue because it seems very difficult to think about African culture, African tradition in relation to all kinds of elements that come from outside. And that is very much hindering, I think, a better understanding of popular processes of mixing. Mm. Of course, the big question also is who has the authority to then define what African culture, African tradition would be, and what to make of the fact that Christianity is very popular, also this Pentecostal brand of Christianity, what to make of the fact that these films talking about occult stuff are very popular. So what to do with these concerns that show in the popularity of these forms. I think it's a big task. It's not something I can answer, of course. But I don't think one can retreat in a position of saying, okay, this is our culture and the things that come from outside are problematic in all kinds of ways.
Yeah. We have another caller here to talk with. And again, you'll have to put on their headphones. And this is someone here where we are in Champaign-Urbana. Champaign, actually, line one.
Hello. Yes. You started to address the answer to my question while I was waiting on the line. The question was, how would you deal with the question of cultural relativity and anything goes versus or in conjunction with the struggle of good and evil? And you already started discussing it as part of your program, but I'd be interested in any more comments you have on that.
Okay. Yeah, that's, of course, the central question and the central point. Now, of course, as an anthropologist, I would not say I'm a cultural relativist, but I do see it as my task to show that what counts as culture is a kind of battlefield, and that what counts as culture is authorized by different people, institutions, in different ways. And what I try to do with my work is to outline, indeed, this whole field of cultural heritage, one could say, which is a dynamic field, by signposting the different positions. And I think what would be very important is to bring people together who also embrace these very different positions and discuss things. For I don't think it is of much help if one position is played off against the other, as happens very much in the Ghanaian setting. So I see it very much, my contribution as an anthropologist would be to help create a forum in which these different positions can at least be put on the table. And of course, I also see it as my task to understand how these popular notions of tradition emerge, why they are so important to people, why they stick too much. I think there is also a lot of work being done and to be done explaining why these ideas that are easily put down as superstitions, which we need to get rid of, why they are so important for people.
Mm-hmm. Well, this leads to the question, and maybe again it's a difficult question, but if you forgive the militaristic metaphor and you embrace the idea that culture is a battlefield and that it is a struggle between different parties who have different kinds of interests, then one wonders what is it that maybe confers particular advantages on particular parties who are involved in this struggle that maybe then, as this continuing process of reforming culture goes along, what is it that gives a certain viewpoint and advantage? And I suppose in the particular case we're talking about here, maybe it's of the power of mass media can in fact be an advantage for you in putting out a particular kind of view. But you know, what is it that gives certain in this process of culture and it changes certain points of view, or certain attitudes or certain sets of values gives them the edge so that then over time some are in ascendancy and some are in decline?
Well, I think it's very important to bring in the state here. Mm-hmm. Ghana was the first African country to be independent, and the president, Nkrumah, immediately saw the importance of film. Also the importance of film in order to create a national culture and bind people to certain notions of cultural heritage that would encompass the different cultural traditions. He also realized the importance of mass media to produce and make circulate his image as the leader of the country, very much the mediation, in fact, of all his speeches and so on. I talked to his former cameraman, Chris Hesse, who was later also the head of the GFRC, who also confirmed that for Nkrumah, film was a mode of governance, in fact. It was very important to convey his ideas and also a notion and image of Ghana, of Ghanaian culture to a broader public. So we could say that media were very much employed to teach a certain state vision of African culture. Now, Nkrumah very much controlled the media, the radio and television, and actually up to 1992, the Ghanaian media have been fully state-controlled. There were no commercial media stations. So any mediation of African culture, of Ghanaian culture via television, radio or film was monitored by the state and brought in line with certain state perspectives of what would consider a cultural heritage. And this state perspective was very much indebted to Nkrumah's vision of African personality, of Sankofaism. And it is a very specific version of producing African culture via media. Now, many things did not go as they should go. Many Ghanaians were disappointed, first with Nkrumah, but then with later governments following him. In the 1980s, the World Bank came in, instigated a structural adjustment program, and also obliged the then President J.J. Rawlings to liberalize and commercialize the media. And it was after 1992 that there were private media stations, even the state film corporation. It was defunct because there was no money for that for a long time, was sold to a Malaysian television company. So democratization of the media and commercialization of the media came together. What was very interesting to see is that at that very moment, Christian churches very much came in, especially Pentecostal churches. They had the expertise to do media things. They had the money to buy airtime. And so they became a kind of second player and a kind of alternative to state visions of culture. Now, it is not so surprising, I think, that many people are so much attracted by these churches. I think one could say that many citizens were quite disappointed by the state's capacity to lead them to development and to modernity. Poverty did not cease. Things remained complicated. So people shifted their hopes from the state as the instance that would lead them towards development to other players. And a major player were churches, and indeed Pentecostal churches, who would promise an alternative ally towards modernity, would have an alternative vision of development, and who would also say quite openly, you know, we cannot just stick to our traditions all the time. We have to move ahead. We have to become part of global networks. There is a very famous preacher in Ghana called Mensa Otabil, who, by the way, is not even very much interested in all the devil talk, who says, of course, I'm African, I dress in an African style, but does that mean that I all the time should be backed by certain cultural traditions which I feel to be limiting? I think as Africans, we have to move ahead, we have to develop ourselves. Now, that kind of narrative, such a person is tremendously popular in the Ghanaian setting because people hope that following his advice may, in fact, yield the so much aspired a state of becoming developed and really being part of the modern world. For now, the desire to be modern, to be part of a developed country, has been so much shattered, and many people don't have that much trust in the state, in its economic policies, social policies, and also not cultural policies. But the whole conflict is about more than just culture. It's a whole package. And so people have shifted, in a sense, their trust from the initial enthusiasm for Nkrumah's plans of African personality to Christian voices in the field. Yeah. And I can understand very well why and how this worked.
Yeah. We have about 5 minutes here on a program. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Birgit Meyer. She's an anthropologist from the University of Amsterdam, and she is visiting here at the campus, hosted by the Department of African Studies, going to be talking about some of these same things in a Millercom talk tonight on the U of I campus. So if you're interested, you can certainly stop by. And one more time before we finish, I'll give you the information on the talk. We have been talking here specifically, you've been talking specifically about this one place in Africa, in Ghana, and also in some sense about Nigeria, because this is the places where you've done a lot of your field work. This is sort of your area of concentration. Yes. But I know that your interest goes a little bit beyond, in a geographical sense, goes beyond that. Some have the kind of things that we've been talking about, you've been talking about happening in Africa, do these sorts of themes and trends, do you see them in other places?
Yes, that's a very interesting and important question. Indeed, I have chaired a comparative research program on religion and media in West Africa, South Asia, the Caribbean, and in Brazil. And my collaborators and myself were very much interested in the upsurge of religious groups, Christian groups, Islamic groups, Hinduist groups, in the aftermath of the liberalization, democratization of media, which across the world in these settings occurred in the 1990s and can immediately be related to IMF policies. What we found was very intriguing. We found that, in fact, the turn to democratization and the liberalization of media made it possible for religious voices to become far more prominent in the public sphere than before. And we tried to explain, in fact, the attraction of media by instigating, indeed, the different promises made by religions and failures, perceived failures on the part of the state to achieve development. And it's, I think, very intriguing to realize that in the aftermath of democratization on media liberalization in many parts of the world, religions are thriving because they assume a certain moral standard, a certain voice of speaking for the people that is incredibly attractive.
See, I think this is very interesting. There are several things here I think that are very interesting, just to sort of draw a point under them. One, the power of media and people of different religions, and we have talked a lot about Christianity, but this is not just something that Christians have done. People of different religions recognizing the power of media as a way of putting out the message.
Yes.
But then the third thing very interesting is that, you know, religious organizations as an alternative to the state in the sense that if you have places where people feel promises have been made and promises have not been kept, that here this has been an opportunity for again, various religious organizations to come in and, you know, and present some alternatives, and that people have indeed embraced those. Now, you know, whether in the long term they will find that satisfying, you know, who knows? But this trend and the way that these three things have come together, I think, is very interesting.
Yes.
And again, maybe it's only because I happen to work in media, I guess that it brings me back to this, you know, this idea of the power of media.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about, you know, is there another really interesting example that comes from that you're familiar with, maybe not out of your own work, but that you're familiar with that is not instead in Africa, but someplace else, and maybe is an example of some other faith, since we've been talking a lot about Christianity, in a sense doing the same kind of thing that we've been talking about.
Now, what I find very interesting is the spread of cassettes in the Middle East. And those are cassettes by preachers that can be counted to be part of Reform Islam, or some people from outside would say fundamentalist Islam, which is an expression I do not like very much. One of the researchers who was also involved in my research program, Charles Hirschkind, did research on the Islamic revival in in Cairo and investigated the use of cassettes, the way these cassettes would spread, the way people would listen to these cassettes everywhere in public space, showing that religion became a strong voice in public space, much more than before. And it is, of course, groups that are quite critical of the state way of assigning a place to Islam. And he has really showed how this cassette culture created a kind of counter public sphere in which Islam was very important. He showed at the same time that the spread of cassettes and listening to cassette sermons was very close to Islamic ideas of creating an ethical self via indeed listening. So taking up radio and cassettes that work via the ear were found very appropriate in fact to mobilize a certain ethics of listening that was very close to Islamic ideas about how to achieve piety.
So is this whole area, as I said, that for you particularly, you're one of the things you're very interested in is this intersection of a popular media, popular culture, and religion. This is something that you expect that you're going to continue to explore. Are there other areas, other questions, other facets of this that you think are really interesting that you haven't quite dug into as much as you would like?
Well, I'm very intrigued indeed by questions of popular culture, but certainly with regard to film, I think it is also important to broaden the field a bit. That is why I'm also very happy about this conference on African film, which is organized by Mahir Saul and Rolf Austin, and which will start tomorrow. The attempt here is to bring together the field of African cinema, African film, as we know it in the West, and then this popular work on video. And I think it is very important not to confine myself to just a popular culture vision, but engage with different perspectives on film, also different perspectives on heritage, culture, and so on, so as to broaden the field. And yeah, this is the kind of initiatives I'm very much interested in and would be looking for.
Well, I guess this morning, Birgit Maurer is an anthropologist from University of Amsterdam. She'll be talking about this as a Millercom talk, African Popular Cinema, Pentecostalism, and the Powers of Darkness, Contested Discourses on Tradition in Ghana, tonight, 7:30 at the Spurlock Museum in the Knight Auditorium. It's a Millercom event. Anyone's welcome to attend. Her visit here is hosted by the Center for African Studies. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The broadcast today made possible in part by a grant from the Great Impasta, restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Impasta now offers a private dining room for parties, meetings, other events. The Great Impasta, 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff there at the Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting AM 580. We're going to break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're at midday at the Chicago Board of Trade. Soybean futures are holding firm. They're continuing to feed off of price strength from outside markets, including crude oil and a lower U.S. dollar. The absence of fresh fundamental news in the grain pit is keeping those outside influences in play as well, and there's some support also being lent to this marketplace as